Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Hope you're having a great day. The Doug Gottlieb Show is broadcasting live from sunny Southern California. What a day. What a day in sports we had yesterday. There's a lot of things about Southern California that to those of you who don't live in Southern California, you're like, yeah, homeless problem. You know, the vaccine madness and cost of living, taxes, these things are not. But yesterday, if you had some cash and you had an afternoon, you could have gone to an iconic ballpark and see two tremendous baseball teams play. And then when the game was over, get in your car, fight traffic, get to Staples Center, watch LeBron and Steph Curry and Anthony Davis and Russell Westbrook. That would have been a hell of a day. It's a pretty good day. The Dodgers won yesterday, and we don't... I know Jason Stewart's my producer. He's been with us for a couple months now. Jay, of course, a lifelong Southern Californian, Los Angelian, and Dodger fan. John Ramos is our director of operations, right? Yes, my technical director, excuse me, but he's also a technical director for all of Fox Sports Radio. And he is a gigantic baseball Dodger fan, bit of a historian, right? So I can rationalize to you guys all that your feelings for a baseball game between the Dodgers and the Braves are not as rife with emotion as Ramos is and Jason Stewart's. And look, I grew up in Southern California. I've always been more of an Angel fan. Now, I've been to several Dodgers World Series games. 88, I went in game two, and I went 2 years ago, also game two. Or 3 years ago, 3 seasons ago, I guess it was. But there is something about October baseball, right? And hockey guys always like, nothing better than overtime hockey. Like, yeah. The thing about overtime hockey is that there's a randomness at times to goals. That's the thing about hockey. Soccer's the same way, where you can outplay the other team. There's just a randomness to the goals. Baseball is this unique thing, and trust me when I tell you, I know what's happening in the world in regards to baseball. I get it. Like, look. We talk football 90% of the time, maybe 80% of the time in the show, and then 15% basketball, and then maybe 5% other stuff, including baseball. But baseball has this unique thing, right? There is no clock. There's simply 27 outs. However you get the 27 outs, if you have, and you only need 24, obviously, if you're the home team, you always have to get 27 outs, my bad. It's 27 outs. However you get it, if you have more runs than the other team, you win. And if you don't, you don't. And the magic to October, like the only thing that parallels it in my mind is March Madness, right? Whereas what you can count on every year is the upset. What you can count on in baseball every year is the type of drama that we had yesterday at Chavez Ravine. In the eighth inning, the Dodgers are down 5-2. I could show you my text messages from the boys and how they're just devastated and upset because here, you know, a supposedly great baseball team chokes yet again. The greatest lineup ever can't hit. Cody Bellinger strides to the plate, a guy who is a great player and had a bad season. Here's the call on the Dodgers radio network.
Jackson, his 18th pitch of the inning. One ball, two strikes. That'll pitch to Bellinger. And a fly ball to right center field. It's well hit, and it is gone! A three-run home run for Bellinger. We've got a new game. It's tied at five on a 1-2 pitch. Bellinger hits it out.
Now, I understand that, like, look, in football a couple years ago, we had the Minnesota Miracle. Game was over. They throw it deep. Stephon Diggs catches it. Rookie cornerback takes a bad angle, has his head down, doesn't see what he's going to hit. But the thing about baseball is it's not just that you can hit a home run. It's that if you have guys on base, you get more than one point, right? Like, it's the only game where you're literally not dead until you get that final out. There's no rules to say you can get as many runs as possible. Whereas in football, you score, the other team gets the ball. They can literally run the timeout and get into victory formation. In basketball, yes, you get it back more quickly, but the other team gets the ball every time you score. This thing was over. It was over. The Dodgers are a mess. Here's Dave Roberts on what the Bellinger home run meant.
We were dead in the water. You could see it, and Luke's coming at throwing 97 miles an hour, and you get a squibber. You get A.J. riding a base hit up the middle to get behind the count and to hit a homer. It just flipped everything, and it just kind of – we got a very good ball club, but we just needed that kind of shot in the arm.
It's Doug Gottlieb's show here on Fox Sports Radio. Here's Cody Bellinger.
Pure enjoyment. It's loud. You don't really hear anything, and you don't really, you know, see anything. Round of second, saw the boys in the dugout giving me the celebration, so I had to do it back. Pure joy, and just glad that I could tie up the game right there to give us a chance.
Here's Joel Klatt, who was on. I was watching Cowherd on FS1. You can hear him on Fox Sports Radio. Joel Klatt was on with Cowherd and Joy Taylor, and they were talking about Dodger fans, because what happened was, a lot like when Kirk Gibson hit the home run in 88, people were leaving. Remember, this is Dodger Stadium. It's like 6 o'clock on a Tuesday, and the game isn't over, but it felt over. Here's Joel Klatt.
You don't leave a playoff game early.
It was
a three-run game. That you just don't do that. You don't do that. Oh. By the way, great baseball fans do not bring beach balls and bat them around the stands. Great baseball fans don't do the wave. All that happens at Dodger Stadium.
Are you calling Dodgers fans bad baseball fans?
1,000% yes.
You know you're in Los Angeles, right?
I do know I'm in Los Angeles. Mm. So before I got here, I would do a pre and post game show for the Colorado Rockies.
Yeah.
Not a great team, but we would travel around and go to all the different stadiums. St. Louis, great baseball fans, knowledgeable baseball
Nothing
fans.
Nothing else to do there.
And San Francisco. Those are the two best baseball fan bases that I ever saw live in the stadium. Dodger fans are...
Let me ask you something, Joel.
They can be passionate LA fans, but then they're going to just like, they're going to leave early. They're going
to
do all this
stuff. If you go to a movie...
Ramos, how you doing with that cut?
I don't know. The Giants fan one, it blows my mind. I would watch Dodger games in 1978, 79, 80, and Candlestick Park would be empty, literally empty, for the most of the season. Why? Because your team was horrible. That's why. I don't know what he said. San Francisco, now, maybe today, they're the best fans because they've won three world championships in the last couple of years. But in general, I don't know what he's talking about. Colorado, I love Colorado fans. They're great. My Rockies are my second favorite team because my mom was from Colorado. I love the Broncos. I don't know. I mean, fair weathered fans, I don't know. Maybe. I hate the wave, too. I used to be in Dodger Stadium to do the wave. I never did it one time.
But his wave and beach ball.
Yeah,
thing,
I don't
remember,
know. It's LA.
Joel,
I don't know.
Joel, but also, Joel was in Colorado. This is not recently. Okay. And they've been awesome recently. I disagree with it. And I'm not somebody who would leave a playoff game 5-2, but we all watched the game. The game felt over. It just did. It felt over. Cody Bellinger hit a ball that was like at his eyes. It was like, you guys remember A League of Their Own?
Yeah.
Remember how Kit couldn't lay off the high ones? Lay off the high ones, Kit. And then finally, in the championship game, she hits a home run, or she gets a double off of Dottie, whatever, wins the game. Was it inside the park? Yeah, it was like inside the park, right? Because she ran over Dottie, and then Dottie dropped the ball. I know that movie way too well. Great movie. The point is, that was Bellinger. Like, Bellinger's like, lay off the high ones. And like, okay. And then he hits a high one out of the park. But like, we make this thing about like, well, one fan is better than the other fan. Like, look, I love Joel, but Dodgers, go and look. You can chalk up 3 million people in Dodger Stadium, no matter how good or how bad they are. Those people have shown up for 40, 50 years. It's an incredible fan base. Now, is it spoiled now because they're in the playoffs for, I think, the eighth straight year, and only once they've won the World Series and people think they should win more World Series or whatever? Sure, that's fair. Okay? But, like, again, we're judging off of some people heading out when it's a 2 o'clock start. It is traffic. I think it was dumb to leave early anyway, just because, like, yes, you get out of the parking lot earlier, but then you're on the freeway and you're in hell. Like, just enjoy the game. But again, I don't know if somebody was heading to the Laker game. I don't know what the deal was.
We have to ask them
all. But that doesn't... Beach balls have been part of Dodger Stadium, and I'm guessing there was no beach ball during the playoffs. Right? People don't do the wave during the playoffs. And that place exploded when Belly hit the home run. My takeaway wasn't Dodger fans are bad. It was Dodger fans leaving tells you oh about how over that game felt until Mighty Cody swung the bat. That was amazing. That was a where were you moment. It was over. And you're down 3-0, and your rotation is in tatters, and your bullpen is all messed up. Like, here's how big it is. Right now, I get if I were to ask any non-Dodger fan who's watched baseball, like, all right, who do you like now? Like, Dodgers. Urias is going to start in game 4. He was terrible in relief going back in game 2. And yet, people are like, Dodgers. Because that's how coming back from that is really hard. But what an amazing... Go ahead, Jason. You want to get on this?
Just back to Joel's point. I don't totally disagree with him, but you do have to admit that there's a socioeconomic part to this, right? Everyone who's leaving, I think, yesterday was the rich people. And the people in the nosebleeds, the people in the bleachers that spent their rent check going to that game, they were in their seats. And I did hear Cowherd this morning talk about this. I think the reason why you saw a full lower bowl is because, like any other sporting event, I think everyone just kind of mobilized down to the great seats. But there were definitely cars heading out of that parking lot. And it's kind of embarrassing. That was the whole takeaway from the Kirk Gibson thing, all the cars leaving. It's an embarrassing part of our fan base. It's just people with money that are like, I got better things to do.
I don't think it's people with money. I think it's unfair to give. Remember, there's 55,000 people in the stadium, and if 1,000 of them leave, it looks a lot worse than. And the reality is, the place was still packed. Okay, I also don't think people were migrating down, because if you've been to Dodger Stadium, you really can't migrate. If you're good, like me and Jay Stu, we could probably do it, but it's actually different levels, different entrances. It's kind of. There are stairwells that you can sneak in and sneak out of or whatever, but it's really hard to do in playoff games. No, I look, when Gibson hit the home run, remember, he's facing Dennis Eckersley, who wasn't just the Rolaids relief. He was the Cy Young Award winner. He was virtually unhittable, and Kirk Gibson couldn't walk. When Cody Bellinger hit the home run, he swings at the high stuff. He can't hit the high stuff. And the guy's hitting 97 on the gun. And, oh, yeah, by the way, Cody Bellinger hadn't hit, he hadn't hit water when he fell out of a boat this year. So it was completely unlikely. But that's baseball. It's magical. And things that are magical should always stay around. Right? It's the March Madness is magical. You keep that around. Every year you get those feelings. Baseball, every year we get this. That's why the sport, it's not dying, but for kids, how many have turned to lacrosse? You know? Go pick the sport. You top out like 12 years old, they all go to Cooperstown. You know, if they're playing pony instead of playing Little League, and then they come back like, yeah, I'm done. Baseball, like, yeah, boring, slow. Right? Everything else in their life has been sped up except for this sport. But then you watch yesterday and you're like, I get it. It's different. It's unique. It's special. And anything that generates that amount of passion, that it's like a fantasy. It's so special. You can't part with that. We don't have to, nor should we. It was amazing. What an amazing sporting event.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Hope you guys are having a great hope you guys are having a great day. Just great day. I'm sitting here and I'm in sports utopia, right? Wherever you are, October's generally the best weather month of the year. It just is. It's amazing. Plus, you got NFL football, college basketball is kicking off. I was actually just texting a friend about something coming up. NBA basketball tipped off last night, and you got Major League Baseball playoffs, which, you know, included all the best teams. Not named the Padres. Just kidding. That's because Daniel Jeremiah joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. What did you think of that eighth inning last night, Chavez Ravine?
I was driving in the car. I was listening to the radio broadcast, and they get two runners on. And I'm sitting there going, this joker who's not done anything all year long is going to hit a three-run home run. Like, this is going to happen. And it was just like it was clear as day that was going to happen. And even on the radio call, they're like, yep, expect a high fastball here. I mean, he hasn't caught up to a high fastball the whole season. Hasn't caught up to a high fastball in 2 years.
Yeah, that one was at his eye.
That's the time. That's the time he gets around on a high fastball and parks it. So, I don't know if it's harder being a Padre fan or a Dodger hater. They, both roles are really difficult.
How old are you, DJ?
I'm 43.
Okay, so you're old enough. Do you remember where you were when Gibby hit the home run?
I don't remember. I remember the home run, obviously. I don't remember. I know which house I was in. I don't remember what was, what I was doing. Yeah,
multiple
time.
Houses? How many houses do you guys have? Like, what was going on here? I remember what house I was in. I was in the guest quarters.
We moved my senior year of high school.
It wasn't high school. It wasn't high school. You're a little kid. Because I was Miles Simon, who, of course, is an assistant with the Lakers and was a star player at Arizona and played in the NBA. Yeah. So I was at Miles Simon's late mother's house, and we were both big Mets fans back in the day, and we're watching the game, and I had tickets to game two. A kid named Carl Doucher was our teammate in our AAU team, and they went to game one. He gave us tickets to game two. Anyway, game one, we're watching, and, you know, Gibby comes limping up to the plate, and Miles turned, and he had a feeble swing at one point in time, and Miles, like, bet he hits one out. I was like, he can't even walk, and he hit one out. he can't even walk. So I know people who have called those big ones before. Yeah. All right, let's get to some football stuff. There's a John McCain who's covered the Houston Texans forever, since really they were created and covered the Oilers before that. His story is that there's expectations Deshaun Watson will be moved to the Dolphins this week. All right, let's start with the Dolphins. I didn't see the wow last year from Tua. It doesn't appear to have gotten better this year, but I don't watch film the way that you watch film. Give me your assessment of Tua Tagovailoa a year and a half into his career.
I thought watching this game against Jacksonville was about as good as I've seen him. I thought it looked like he had a little bit of his twitch back, a little bit of his urgency. The things that I liked about him coming out, I thought you saw some of that. Now, he just doesn't have a huge arm. He's not going to make those wild plays that you referenced to give you those wild moments. But I thought that was the best version of NFL Tua, as good as the version as we've seen the other day. So that's why that took me a little bit off guard that this was – that this is going to go down right now. I know they were very much in on Deshaun, and I thought that would, could be likely to happen once we got to the season. But clearly to me, this is John McClain doesn't say anything unless he's locked in. He's as respected as it gets. So I believe that, this thing could be going down. Honestly, I don't like the timing of it for either team. I don't like the timing of it for Houston, quite frankly. I think you wait until you get to the off season. I think that's when you're going to maximize the value of what you can get, and it'll be fixed in terms of knowing where these teams are picking. There's nothing fixed right now. Picks are going to be.
I agree. Let's see, one, if it gets consummated, two, what it looks like when it gets consummated. But the thing that I think is crazy is it destroys the Dolphins season this year, right? Like, if you're Tua, you're out. You know you're out, whether you're out this year or not.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's weird. It's a weird timing to me.
How does the league handle that? Where he has these civil charges against civil suits against him, and how does the league handle?
Well, this is a team decision, though, right? I mean, for him, with him not playing right now, is a team decision. I don't think that it's a league decision. Correct?
No.
So maybe the Dolphins. Nobody really knows.
Like, do you think they can really throw him out there?
No, that's what I'm wondering. Like, you know, are they comfortable playing? If you're comfortable making that trade, I don't know if you're gonna. Are they gonna sit and wait for all this to get to its completion before they put him out on the field? I don't know. I mean, that's the information I don't have. But one of the things I'm just looking at this next offseason, Doug, and we came up with legitimately probably 10 teams that could be changing quarterbacks next year. And spoiler alert, there aren't 10 quality options to fill those seats. So you have, if everything gets cleared up with Deshaun Watson, you have the ultimate lottery ticket to cash in if you are going to trade him.
Baker Mayfield is not going to play tomorrow night, but how much of it, like, look, they're completely banged up. No offensive tackles, no Jarvis Landry, but you know, this is a year in which he's trying to make a case for a big contract. How's he actually played?
He's been fine. I mean, I don't think there's, you know, I thought there was a little bit of drop off after the shoulder, but I think he's pretty well established with who he is. You know, he's a solid player who's a, you know, in my opinion, probably like a, you know, 13th to 16th, you know, quarterback, you know, in that range. So if you have the rest of your team loaded up, you can go on a run. You probably win a championship, but they are so beat up. And then, you know, obviously with him being not as good with the injury that he's dealing with, it's difficult. I agree with some of the sentiment that's out there, though, about I don't think you can pay him what he's going to want, because you're not a QB-centric team. And if you're not a QB-centric team, you need all the other pieces to be in place. And once you pay that money out, you're not going to be able to have all those pieces in place for a long period of time. So it's going to be a fascinating contract, the negotiation with those two.
You got a chance to see Dan and Jeremiah joining us. Move the Sticks is the podcast. You can see it on NFL Network. You can download it with Bucky Brooks. And, of course, he's also the radio analyst for the L.A. Chargers. Chargers caught a beatdown at the hands of the Baltimore Ravens in Baltimore. Got a chance to see Lamar in person. Okay, so the discussion we had yesterday was, I'm not going to go crazy and go Lamar is an elite passer. He's arguably, or maybe even inarguably, the greatest running quarterback of all time, and he's become a good enough passer where you have to, like, there's things that he's doing better now, but, like, he's not Rodgers, Mahomes, or Brady, or, you know, one of those guys, right? Like, Russell Wilson throwing the football. Is that a fair perspective on it, considering how much you've studied and what you've seen in person?
Well, I think he has gotten better. He's improved, I think, as a thrower. He's always been a great quarterback because of everything that goes into it, defending him as a player, and the running is a big part of that, the extending plays. I saw it up close this last week. He had two picks, one of which wasn't his fault, but one was just a really, really bad read. But he didn't, outside of that, I don't think he really missed many throws, and he's done a better job of realizing teams are scared to rush him. So he can afford to sit back there and be patient. And, like, there's instances where in the past, I think he might try and fit balls in the end of first window, and you'll see errant throws, and you might see, you know, an interception or kind of get away from you. And then now he's realizing, you know, I'm in no hurry. I can wait till he gets to the second or the third window, because everybody's scared to death trying to rush me because they know I can take off and run. So he's done a nice job of kind of slowing himself down, which has led to more accuracy. So I definitely have seen improvement from him from year one to where he is now as a passer. And it's just a unique experience to watch those games, because you literally see fear in a pass rush, which is bizarre.
What happened to the Chargers?
Well, I mean, like, you can say they're flat, which is totally accurate. They came out, they didn't have any energy. I think it's the wrong team to play when you're missing two starting linebackers and a starting defensive tackle. So those are issues. But I even coming into that game, I thought, okay, the Ravens might run the ball down their throats. That wasn't a surprise. I was shocked that offensively they were as incapable as they were. Justin probably, you know, you make a case that was his worst game, that game or the New England game last year of his career. Missed some throws. Timing was off. Mike Williams didn't practice. They weren't on the same page, and they had some opportunities for some reason. He went at Marlon Humphrey a number of times, who I think is really the only good cover guy they have in the secondary right now for the Ravens. So we're just totally out of whack, totally out of sync. But in a 17-game stretch, you're going to have a couple clunkers, and that was a clunker in all three phases.
The Dallas thing with Mike McCarthy and managing a game, I just feel like it hasn't bitten him yet, but it's gonna, and it's probably gonna in a big spot. Like, is this, how do you fix that? How do you fix the fact that here's the guy, he's not the OC, he's not the DC, he's not calling plays, and yet he can't seem to manage a game properly?
Well, the good news is, as an organization, you can give him help, you know? So that, to me, at some point in time, you say, okay, he hasn't figured this out. Let's stop waiting for him to figure it out. Let's get somebody in that role who is an expert in that field, put him up in the box, put him on a headset, and let him make those decisions. I mean, that seems like it would be a pretty easy solve to fix all this stuff.
I would think. They're a super talented team. I mean, really, really talented.
Oh, yeah.
Team.
Explosive, yeah. Dynamic. Yeah, they're really good. I'll stick by what I said, though, last week when we talked. If healthy, and man, are they not, I still think the Cleveland Browns are the most talented 53-man roster in the NFL.
It's crazy considering how banged up they are.
And I mean, they might be down their starting quarterback, their top two running backs, their top two receivers, their top two tackles, and not to mention the defensive injuries.
Outside of that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the show?
Yeah, no, that's brutal.
Absolutely, positively brutal. What do you make of the Raiders playing so well last week?
Yeah, I picked them to win. I mean, I thought, you know, Doug, you've been around sports forever. How many times have you seen it? The teams kind of, they rally together and they draw close in turbulent times. And it's kind of an us against the world mentality. And they were so flat and so off the week before with all that stuff swirling. I think just having some finality to it, I think that was good for them. And now we'll see if they can keep it rolling going forward. But I wasn't surprised to see them come out and play really well last week.
It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Daniel Jeremiah is our guest. Move the Sticks. It's a podcast. You can see him or it on the NFL Network. And, of course, he's the radio analyst for the Chargers games. I know it's really in terms of quarterback stuff in college, but what do you make of Spencer Rattler losing his job at Oklahoma?
Well, I mean, it's not really a huge surprise to me. I mean, I watched him over the summer, and I didn't think he was in the same class as those other OU quarterbacks they've had, the last three that they've had go on to the NFL. So I thought he was still very much a project who was very raw. And then I hadn't seen this kid that came in there. I didn't know much about him, you know, coming out of high school. But I know like Jim Donnan, who's a former coach at Georgia, is a friend of mine, and he had some connection to him or had seen him throw. He texted me and said, wait till you see this kid that Oklahoma brought in, how good he is. Like, he's incredible. And sure enough, you know, that guy got on the field. That was a wrap.
Oh, I mean, unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right, off week. No game for you this week.
Glorious. It's glorious. By the way, you asked me earlier about, do I remember where I was with the Dodgers moment?
Yeah.
No, but I can tell you my earliest sports moment where I remember exactly where I was. Yeah. I was 10 years old. It was 1987 when Keith Smart hit the jumper to win the national championship. I was on a green couch with my brother. My parents were not home, and me and my brother were jumping up and down on the green couch when that ball went through the hoop.
The Hoosiers win a national championship. That was in the Superdome.
That was the radio call, too. 3 seconds, 2 seconds, one. The Hoosiers have won the national championship, and there's pandemonium here as Indiana's won it. I had a picture with the shot where you push the button, and it played that radio call in my room.
Yeah, it was Derek Coleman missed free throw, front end of a 1-1, 19-year-old freshman, D.C.
Yep. And Ronnie Cicely was on that team.
Oh, Ronnie Cicely, Sherman Douglas, great team. Stevie Thompson.
Yep. Nice.
Great stuff, dude. Thanks for joining us.
See you, bud.
All right, that's Dana Jeremiah joining us.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. In regards to the Deshaun Watson thing, like, that's how are they going to trade for him this week? Like, how will that work? We still don't know what happens with all these civil cases. We still don't know what the league will rule. Byer, you got any idea how you handle this? How do you trade for a guy that no one knows how long until he actually plays again?
I don't know how you do, and I don't know why you would if you're the Miami Dolphins at this point. The fact of the matter is right now they're not a good football team. So if you're hoping to salvage your season by getting Deshaun Watson, who hasn't played at all this year and has just been basically going through the motions, I understand wanting to take care of your quarterback position, but it's the timing of not only Watson's case, but just where the Dolphins are this season. I don't understand why you would want to do it, unless they fear that there's going to be other suitors for Watson's services this offseason, if they feel like they're the only team in the bidding right now. But that still doesn't even make much sense to me when I think there are going to be a lot of quarterback options out there next year offseason.
It doesn't make sense. Jay Stu, what do you think of how this works, how this looks? How do you trade for a Deshaun Watson?
Right. And the part of it that I keep thinking about is the second you do that, you're going to have all of the media asking you character questions. How can you do this? And you're going to have to answer all those questions too. So that brings the distraction along with the trade. It brings the everything that comes with that, right? I mean, that's got to be a big part of this if you're a team making this decision at this point, is it not?
It is. I think it is at this point. I think so. Well, I heard a breath
there,
Dan.
Yeah, I was going to say, I actually now just think it's temporary. I mean,
what's temporary?
The backlash of bringing a guy in, no matter what the situation is, of we move past it now in the National Football League.
We do, but there's like, and look, I think the longer this goes and there's no criminal charges, I do think that you feel like it's not nearly as, I mean, it doesn't feel like criminal behavior. Okay. On the other hand, like, that's some creepy stuff there. I
agree. The only case that, and I actually thought about it this past weekend, was Kareem Hunt's situation. Remember Kareem Hunt got released by the Chiefs when they were
when the video came out.
Yeah, a playoff caliber team, and it was because he lied to them. That was part of it, but it was a huge, huge deal. And I felt like that was always going to label Kareem Hunt. And now here we are in October 2021, and I don't even know if it's...
No, nobody brings it up. No, yeah. Joe Mixon, nobody brings it up.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I just...
Yeah, it is different when you're a quarterback, right? And the volume of accusations, I think, is different. But yeah, you're right. We do. Like, we think if you still have time left to play, I mean, Mike Vick went to prison and rehabilitated himself and became one of the more respected guys in the NFL. Obviously, now he's on Fox breaking down the NFL. Like, this is a convicted felon for murdering dogs, right? But he had time. He obviously had the talent, but he also had the time to rehabilitate his name, and he did so in great fashion. So but this is a hard one, especially if you consider the context of the time, place where we are in as a country, right? Me Too movement has taken place. That has something to do with it. Like, I just think this is a very unique one.
Unless they're getting an extreme discount because of it.
Right.
That would be the only way where I say that you move forward, because it doesn't make sense from the PR angle, to Jason's point, in the short term. It doesn't make sense in the short term, for this season and bringing him in. They're 1-5 right now.
No, but I think, you know? I think if they, it's not just a discount. It's the, they can take the bullet right now and then probably suspend him for the rest of the year and go back next year. Yes, Ramos, you want to get on this?
Is there any possibility that they may know something that like we don't know, like the Dolphins, some sort of internal investigation that's headed in the way that he will be not convicted or that, and they're like, okay, now's the time to go get him since it's it's probably going to... Is that a possibility, or that's just too far-fetched to think? That they may know something that the rest of us don't know. Like the NFL, they may have somebody that says, hey, this guy's going to be acquitted.
Yes, I think there's a distinct... Jason, don't you think isn't that reasonable to think that we're sitting here and they wouldn't be able to make this move unless the NFL is like, look, this stuff is mostly going to go away?
Right, yeah. Maybe they have some inside information, but like, remember the conversation we had about John Gruden? It was like, I think the NFL or the Raiders are going to overreact here because of the climate we're in that you just mentioned, right? It's like, I just can't imagine, given the details and what supposedly happened, that the NFL is going to not do anything or give them a clean bill of health for any team to trade for. But yeah, it maybe.
But to John's point, it's the... We may not know as much as the Texans know, but the Dolphins would know just as much as the Texans know. And that's where the whole rub of it is, yeah, we as the general public don't necessarily know what's going on. But if the Texans know he's going to be suspended or not going to be suspended, then the Dolphins sure as heck know. And that's where the value of the deal comes in of if he's going to be suspended, then he's probably will be a huge discount. But if they both know something that he's not, then maybe the Texans can get their worth for him. That would be the thing that I would say to answer to John's questions. We may not know, but everybody in that NFL circle that would be involved would know what is happening.
And if nothing's going to happen, is it completely untenable with the Texans? I mean, couldn't they just throw him back on the field and say, you're our quarterback? Or what's the dynamic there? If we're assuming that the NFL is going to not do anything.
I just think that it'll be some commissioner's exempt list, some way of... There's no way that they don't know that this is not going to rise to the level of criminal, and probably there's a good chunk of the accusations which would... Like, it's one of those they're pooled together to make them look stronger, but they have to be pooled together because otherwise they're not particularly strong.
Well, I also think it's important to realize is that Deshaun Watson... isn't playing for the Texans not because of the accusations. It's really because he said he'd never want to play for the Texans again. And so if he, that's kind of the whole, that's why he's showing up and not doing anything. And they don't want him to be hurt because of the possible trade value. But I'm sure that in their grand scheme of things, they would love to have Deshaun Watson starting right now, but he has said he is not going to play, and he's only showing up because of he wanted to get paid. He didn't want to miss out on checks, but they're not keeping him out because of these allegations. He just doesn't want to play for them anymore.
Here's a question. I think it's both, though. I think they're keeping him out because you can't have him in a uniform right now with no clarity. And
then how are the Dolphins?
I don't know. Here's a question. Do we think the Dolphins send Tua back in return? I mean, how can Tua be a... Like, Deshaun Watson's going to take that job as soon as he's eligible to play. How can they act, you know, can they keep throwing Tua out there?
I don't think that it adds any value to what Houston would want. If you're going to go with a young quarterback, might as well just keep throwing Davis Mills out there. If you're going to go with a veteran, go with Tyrod Taylor. Adding Tua to the mix, I don't think does anything for the Houston Texans. That's why I actually thought a Seattle move in the offseason, if they wanted Russell Wilson, and where you could send maybe Tua to Seattle to take Russell's spot for a season or two, depending on how that played out, like that would be more of a situation where you could get value for Tua. But if you're the Texans, you stink anyway. Might as well just play it out with Davis Mills. And If Taylor's going to be your starter when he's healthy, like David Culley says, then there's no point in having Tua anyway.
It is crazy that Tua is getting basically Josh Rosen'd, right? And when Josh Rosen came into the league, yep. When Josh Rosen came into the league, there were lots of red flags. It didn't feel like they were the same with Tua. I mean, I pointed out a bunch of things, but I talked to these NFL guys. They're like, you know, yeah, I mean, you're worried about him getting hurt in the hip and all that other stuff, and he's little, but man, there's something to him that's special, and we haven't seen it. And boy, are they moving on quick.
I feel like Rosen got caught up in the you move to a new town for a new job, and then that company is sold 6 months later, and new people come in, and while you're new, you're a part of the old regime, and the Cardinals had the first overall pick, you know?
Yeah, but Steve Keim was the GM who drafted him. Steve Keim was the one who, yes, it was a different coaching staff, and they had a horrible offensive line, but the guy who drafted him was the guy, and I would guess they drafted him because people thought he fell, and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
that was another weird situation of just when they, you know, of him playing. But I do think that Tua now is getting more of a look. He's getting more of the opportunity. I thought there were a lot of similarities for how their rookie seasons played out, how Rosen was used and how Tua ended up getting the job. But now you gave him a whole offseason. You gave him these first 5-6 weeks. And I know he was hurt for a while, but they're 1-5. I would still play out Doug. I would still play it out with Tua, see what he does over these last 10 weeks. See how it plays out, and then make your decision on if you want him to be your quarterback or not. Does not make any sense to add Deshaun Watson right now.
This is where sports is cruel, right? I mean, just here's a guy who comes in as a red shirt freshman and throws as iconic a touchdown pass as possible, has what would be a storybook college career. People are supposedly tanking games to get him. His last game, you know, he's in. It's still the first half. I would, you know, people would always wonder why was he in the game. I think it was like 42-7 or 42-0 or something against Mississippi State, and he got hurt, broke his hip. Like, there's so much to that story, but to make it all the way back, finally get to start, and then how they were using him last year felt like, okay, well, maybe they're not all in on Tua. And then the Deshaun Watson rumors in the offseason, and then, you know, Tua's just not that good. I mean, it feels like they knew. Feels like they knew. Now, it should be pointed out that you got the same GM who seems to have screwed up the trade with the Philadelphia Eagles, right, to change wide receivers, to trade basically for different wide receivers and lose your first-round pick this year. So that whole thing is fascinating. But Deshaun Watson, obviously, like, look, if you can get him, he's amazing. People know I've never been he's a top-five quarterback guy just because – usually when you have a guy have a great year and he's your quarterback, you're going to win. And they haven't always, last year he had a great year, they didn't win. But there's no question how he's, before this stuff, how he was respected, the plays that he makes to win games. He's a playmaking quarterback. But man, this is fascinating, fascinating stuff. Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Check out the latest lines from World of Sports at Bet Rivers Sportsbook. Bet Rivers is the trusted name online sports betting. You must be 21. You must be present in Colorado, Indiana, Illinois, or Pennsylvania to play. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Hey, did you guys hear what Von Miller said? So the Browns are going to play the Broncos on Thursday night. Browns not going to start Baker Mayfield. Case Keenum's going to get the start. And they're still missing their starting offensive tackles. Here's Von Miller on who he's going up against.
Pressure's on me to play well. I will play well. I don't know who the tackle is and I'm going against, but I'm going to kill him. I'm going to kill him and the other guy too on the other side, and I'm going to play extremely well, and I'm going to make plays for my team. And, I'm going to set us up to win this game for sure.
That's awesome. Do you think, Jay Stu, do you take that as disrespectful that he doesn't know who he's playing against?
I think it sounds much more playful, by the way, than it reads. But I will say this. He happened to offend the Browns and then whoever he's playing against. And then there's going to be that that sector of woke Twitter that'll be like, well, this is proof. If anything happens to that tackle, he's on record now as premeditated.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, it's his job to kill the quarterback, right? Like Von Miller saying, like, I'm going to kill this guy. Like, that's what he's going to do, whoever he's going against. Does anybody know who the actual, I'll tell you who it is. Dan Byer, who's the starting left tackle for the Browns?
Jedrick Wills. But he's hurt. So that's.
No, I meant who's actually starting.
Oh, no, I don't.
Ramos, you want to take a guess?
I have no clue.
Okay. Well, again, this is. It's Alex Taylor per their depth chart.
Okay.
Alex Taylor would be the left target per their. Alex Taylor is 24. He's 6'8", 301. I mean, that is a physical specimen. 24 years old. Played South Carolina State. So.
Is that actually who it is? Because this ESPN depth chart I'm looking at, he's fourth on the depth chart. That's how banged up they are, that a guy who is fourth on the depth chart is their left tackle.
I believe that's where he is. I believe that's where he is. Yeah. Oh, he's not fourth in depth chart now. Now I think he's starting now.
Congratulations, Alex.
Also down the right tackle, Jack Conklin's hurt too. So
yeah, so you got James Hudson's going to start there. Alex Taylor's going to start the other. You know, you got James Hudson the third, 6'5", 313 out of Cincinnati, only 22 years old. So, and he got his first start last week. So he's going to start again at right tackle.
Here's a question. Would you rather watch Broncos-Browns tomorrow on Fox, or should Fox just replay the drive game from the AFC Championship?
The drive game?
Yeah.
I think so many people haven't seen that, don't remember it. Now, which one would you, play the drive or the fumble? Would you play the drive or the fumble?
I think the drive is more. The fumble, the game, the Broncos are actually kicking the Browns' butt in the first half. Browns ended up coming back, but I would go with the drive because of just how it looked and how it started everything. Yeah. I mean, that was really John Elway was, a star player, but that was really his
coming out.
Yeah.
Yep. I like those Browns teams. I really did.
Have you gotten a chance to talk to Ernest Biner over the years, Doug? He's been amazingly gracious about that fumble thing, and he's turned it into a great cause, and he's beloved in Cleveland and everything.
I have talked to him. You want to feel so bad for a guy, right? Like literally going into the end zone to score the game-winning touchdown and go to the Super Bowl. That's not the worst one. The worst one I can remember, okay? Do you guys remember, Byer, you may remember, Kevin Steele was the coach at Baylor? Kevin Steele has been a longtime D coordinator in the NFL. He was, I think it was 1999, they played UNLV. It was the first game of his career as head coach at Baylor. And they were up, I don't know, I'm going to say 3-4 points or something. And all they had to do was take a knee. But he was so determined to make a statement win for Baylor. This is back before Baylor was any good in the Big 12. And the running back goes up and over the line and fumbles at like not even the one. They pick it up and run it back for a touchdown and lose the game. Like that is the difference in the Biner thing, obviously, is if he scores, holds on to the ball, they go to a Super Bowl. They didn't pick it up and run it back. They picked it up and then they covered it. And then Elway led them on a drive. And I think they wanted a field goal, right? So it was a 99-yard drive. This one, they actually got it and ran it back. That's the worst I've ever seen.
I remember this one time a team threw an interception at the 1 yard line in the Super Bowl and lost, but we don't have to talk about that anymore.
That's true. It is 1999 though, by the way, like going into the end zone, because you're we're being convinced by Daryl Royal that only, three things can happen when you pass, two of them are bad, but you can, two things can happen that are bad when you're running the football as well.
The worst ending, quick say this, your alma mater, when they lost to Central Michigan a few years ago, when the refs gave Central Michigan an extra play, when the game just should have been over, like that's the refs being idiots. It's nobody's fault but the refs not knowing the rules, the only people that are supposed to know the rules. Oh, yeah.